Sibisi Jonas. I mean, it's so good to see you again. I haven't seen you since you were Deputy Finance Minister, and then you blew the whistle, and your life changed kind of dramatically. Yeah. Any regrets?
None whatsoever, Alec. I think it's good to see you too. I mean, none whatsoever. I think it was a good thing to do at that particular moment, because there were a couple of events and issues, things happening before, and it was very clear in my mind that the trend is only going to one direction. The blurring of lines between the political and criminal networks, but also I think the deepening of weakening of state institutions, and of course, I mean, the undermining of all laws basically in the constitution. And these are real foundations for state failure.
It's extraordinary. I think many people who pay attention to politics in South Africa, and certainly it was a watershed moment. I remember I was in a car driving to the airport when the news came over that you'd blown the whistle, and I think many people feel the same way and express their gratitude to you for doing it. But personally, how are you seeing our country now? I mean, we've come through the mill, but was it worth all the sacrifice, and are we going to make this thing happen?
Look, South Africa, I mean, we are definitely a resilient people. I mean, we have huge challenges, and I guess, I mean, the nature of the crisis we have is such that you could probably call it a chronic crisis, basically. We're not about to implode and explode, but I think we are on a steady decline, which has to be kind of halted and redirected, so to speak. And I guess, I mean, the political system itself is also, I think, has reached its sell-by date. It needs to be probably recalibrated in ways that I think that many of the political players are not imagining at the present moment. We need to change the electoral system and to enforce accountability and ensure, because I mean, we cannot rely on the whims of the parties for change. We've got to ensure that citizens are more empowered, and that I think the electorate has better optionality in terms of choices, better optionalities in terms of choices, but also we need to recalibrate our economy.
I'm so glad, I'm going to just move this over there so we can see it a little better. There we go, we got your face a bit better. I'm so glad you raised that, because since I've arrived in Switzerland, I've spoken to quite a lot of Swiss people, and they were telling me how their government works. Now, this was a big thing for me. So they've got Protestants and Catholics to the degree that in Davos, for instance, and there are many other towns like this, the Catholics are in Dorf, the Protestants are in Platz, and they have a different approach. So Platz is well commercialized, Dorf not so much. So they've got Protestants, Catholics. Then they've got German-speaking Swiss, French-speaking Swiss, Italian-speaking Swiss. So if you want to be nationalistic, you got a lot of different people here, and yet it works. So why does it work? I ask them, I keep asking them. They say, because we don't understand this, you get 51% of the vote, you tell the rest of the country what to do, the 49% that didn't vote for you, like happens in Britain and happens in America. And maybe the worst thing the colonialists left us with was that system of government, rather than maybe a Swiss or a Danish or a, you know, they all work in coalitions. Here, there is no one person who can just make all the rules. Even if there's 10, 20% of the country, that's the only vote you had, you have a coalition. So when you talk about a different political system, do you have that kind of thing in mind?
I have something, I think I have something more deeper than that. I think what we need is to begin to recalibrate a national agenda. I mean, think about it. 94, we met, and there was a whole discussion, and that mapped the vision, and everybody bought into the vision. To be honest, whatever political party won the elections, it had an agenda that was visible to everybody. And I guess, I mean, we are at that point, I think, that the country requires to do a similar thing, to say, what is that broad vision that should take us out of where we are, and to what direction is it going to take us, and what are the element and constituent elements of that, and how different constituencies can be carried on board in doing that. And once you have that, and in a sense some elements being enshrined in a general agreement or convention agreed upon by everybody else, election become an important part of reinforcing that. But everybody buys into an agenda.
I love it.
Now, if you say that education is important, and I think it is fundamentally important, I mean, we can say many things about land restitution and this and that. The reality of the matter is that, I mean, many people will tell you that if you want to take poor families out of poverty, ensure that their kids get better education. And it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
and in South Africa, I think those are the some of the, I mean, I would argue, powerfully and potentially inequality reducing initiatives that we should lift.
You know, we've been talking for a long time in our country about how technology is going to help us to educate. But I was in a session at the Wall Street Journal with where the editor-in-chief spoke to Satya Nadella, and he's talking about ChatGPT, which. Sure, it's like hitting Davos with a tidal wave. And he said ChatGPT is like having the best tutor in the world for each student.
And you have it in your, comfort of your home or anything.
I mean, now imagine our country if every child can actually have the best tutor in the world to be educated through the potential that will be unlocked. So it's a lot of these things, but moving on, what do you come to this World Economic Forum for?
Look, I mean, I wanted to end that by saying South Africa has a lot of potential, and I think we're seeing it. I think most South Africans, irrespective of their political kind of orientation or ideological orientation, I think believe in the same thing. Good education, good public health system, and an economy that generates jobs and that reduces inequality. So I think that's a positive thing. And that I think, is the source of our resilience. And I think we need to tap into that and make it work. When we come to Davos frequently, I come from MTN and I chair the MTN group. And I think there are two things. I mean, it's important that corporates understand where the world is going. We understand the macro, we understand the changes, because I think sometimes we use the word crisis to describe what's happening, but if you think about it, the last 15 years have been a series of multiple crises, I mean, that we've gone through, and in fact, crisis has become permanent, not cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
So and how we re-script the geopolitical dynamics and the global economy is something that all corporates should really be concerned with and understand very well, because I think the fortunes and misfortunes, not only of countries, but also of corporates, are coinciding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a time when business would say, our business of doing business is business. The truth of the matter is, if you don't look at regulation, if you, the regulatory environment, if you don't understand what do you do with poverty in the places where you're operating, if you don't deal with issues of growth in general, not just of your business, etc., that's why ESG becomes important.
Mm.
And increasingly, social becomes important in that ESG. Mm. Because when you sit on boards now, it's important. Inflation, for instance, it's crucial, because it also talks about the standards of living going down, and it has direct impact on the performance of companies, et cetera. So the conversation that you have here is crucial in the sense that it highlights something that seldom happens in the boardroom, a broader discussion on the macro. And operating in a telco space, that's crucial. You can't escape that.
Now, you guys have, you're at the sharp end of one of the other big stories. There's kind of three big stories. ChatGPT is one, which is going to be good for MTN. Supply chains is another one. It's massive. I heard it described by a guy from PwC last night as Trump, when he did the trade wars, brought it to the public attention. The COVID pandemic took it into the boardroom. And Ukraine's war has actually put it as number one on the agenda in boardrooms, supply chains. It's just not like it used to be. And then the other thing, of course, climate change, which is changing the way people do business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as a thought, and I'm sure you're going to be in various, you're going to have conversations where you're going to get more of that, but your thought on those two?
Look, I mean, clearly, I mean, again, I mean, geopolitics have a huge role to play in that kind of thing. I mean, their big risk is managing supply chain and consistency. of supply chains. Mm. And I think, I mean, many, that's why many people are talking about nearshoring as opposed to offshoring.
Yeah. No, that's a new word. Isn't it? I mean, had you heard it before?
It was not there before. And because really, people are looking at those things. But also, it's also, I mean, I always say that as a continent or emerging economies, it's not a matter of choice between the East and West or between China and the US. It's fundamentally how accessible the technological innovation is. But also we must start strengthening our own innovation systems in the continent and in the emerging economies. And these are huge conversations that say we have to set our own priorities also in emerging economies. We must understand that these shifts in the global economy might impact the operation, our operations, and therefore issues of innovations become important. We need to create in the continent digital platforms, which is what MTN is trying to do. Creating a continental digital platforms, we need to create fintech platforms in the continent, but also that are linked to the global system, as it were. And that's, I think, probably a shift in the mindset. Where, I mean, if you think about it, we're having a conversation now in a committees of shares. We're having a conversation about the changing nature of the role of boards. The role of CEO, you don't actually need a bean counter for a CEO anymore. You need somebody who kind of has the tactical understanding to maneuver the changes and shifts in the environment, but also has a bigger picture in understanding that the operating environment is uncertain and changing all the time, and also understanding that he has to interact with regulators, so be able to deal with politicians and stuff like that. So it's a different kind of animal that you're looking for. And I'm sure a couple of years before, you're looking for some kind of a technocrat who just runs the company and so on and so on. Today, you're looking for something different. You're also looking for someone who has a nerve for understanding that social issues are so important for doing good business.
The world has changed. So are you going home, or when you go home from Davos, do you go home happier, or does it get you down, the information you get here?
Look, I mean, it's a debate that we've been going through for some time. So I mean, the one good thing about Davos is also to show you that it's not only South Africa; we're not an outlier.
Sometimes we think it's only us. Yeah.
So you start looking at other people and realizing that they're grappling with the same questions, both advanced economies as well as developing economies, the same issues people are grappling with. So that's a good thing, I mean, because then it changes your perspective on how you approach these things. But also we have to deal with another danger, I think, the danger of, because I mean, when there's a crisis, and a crisis occurring in a context where the solution is not in sight, people start, and people always resort to finding scapegoats. So what could be the scapegoats? It could be the kind of multinationals, multinational companies, or it might be
the WEF itself,
racial groups. It might be.
They say the WEF. I mean, you've seen the fake news about the WEF. Yeah. It's part of the problem now. Yeah.
So but I think that's a function of a world with increasingly no intellectual, technical, or visionary solutions. And that's something that I think I always say that as we go home, I mean, we must actually hammer in our minds that the clamor and the hatred that sometimes emerges in contexts, whether it's racial hatred, whether it's hatred against people who foreigners in our countries or whatever, it stems from a fundamental weakness in the technical system, in the intellectual system, where people are not finding solutions and we're not working on solutions. And so scapegoating is easy, populism is easier solution, and so on and so on. But everybody's grappling with that.
Yeah.
So it's not our problem only. And which actually means that I think as South Africans, we need to be really focused. We've good things happening, and I think Eskom or the electricity crisis at a technical level, I think it's a crisis that we can resolve. It needs vision, and I think it needs kind of risk taking. both political risk taking, and I'm not sure whether, I mean, our leaders need to have gumption to for political risk and actually make the decisions that need to be made to kind of take us out of where we are. Our crisis of growth is fundamentally important, and we need to deal with it. I mean, it's so to know that growth can be dealt with. Look at companies; there are companies that are making a lot of money in a sea of underperformance, mm-hmm. of underperforming economies. What it tells you is that you can change it and turn around these economies. The issue of transformation, inclusion in our economy, again, it's something that we can deal with. Mm-hmm. But these are not like short-term issues, they're long-term mm. issues. And these are issues that are not faced. I mean, mm. a couple of years ago, Europe was not talking about exclusion. A couple of years ago, I mean, Europe didn't have like the same widespread social tension mm. Between different classes, etc. Mm. Today they are. And these are signs of the time. They require leaders with vision. They require political systems that are durable and inclusive. They require economies that are more focused and companies that understand their social responsibility.
And open-mindedness. Yeah. Because if we go into a conversation with humility and open-mindedness, we tend to learn. Mm. We tend to learn when we come out of it. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with Sibisi Jonas, the chairman of MTN, but better known in South Africa as the man who started the war against corruption. Thank you again for that.
Thank you very much.
And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.
Thanks.